This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
The Rainbow Report. News and current affairs for the rainbow community. From Joy 94.9, Australia's only full-time gay and lesbian radio station. And now, your host, Doug Pollard.
Well, good evening and welcome to a special 10th anniversary Rainbow Report. Yes, it's 10 years since I first walked through the doors and up a very steep flight of stairs to become a Joy member for the first time. Since then, I've done community service announcements, been the breakfast newsreader, broadcast a daily half-hour Rainbow Report back then, if you can imagine it, and a three-hour morning show called Freshly Dug. But most often I've been doing this familiar one-hour Rainbow Report, such as what you're listening to now. So as it's a very special occasion, we have some very special guests. After a nationwide round of consultations, the government has announced some profound changes to aged care, including recognising for the first time the special needs of LGBTI seniors, a subject dear to my heart since I turned 60 last year and I'm officially senior myself nowadays. Thanks to the hard work of many senior GLBTI advocates around the country, especially Dr. Joe Harrison over in Adelaide, who has worked incredibly hard on this, the Minister for Mental Health and Ageing, Mark Butler, heard firsthand from many older Australians, and I have to say, he's responded quite magnificently. Earlier today, I spoke with the Minister and the LGBT Health Alliance representative, Corey Earlham, about the changes and how they will help seniors like me. Also on the programme today, at the Victory Life Church in Perth, former tennis great and not-so-great Christian, Margaret Court, will be holding a rally to preserve marriage. Sounds like a jam-making session, doesn't it? Activists, however, are holding a counter-rally outside, along with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, so that should be fun. We'll be crossing for a live report. I was going to say I'm going to do a live cross, but in this context that might have been misinterpreted. The Equal Love counter-demonstration for human rights and marriage equality is gathering now at the Glendalough train station, which is just around the corner from the Victory Life Church. So if you're in Perth, head on down. And then last but by no means least, and in fact coming up first, the Victorian AIDS Council has embarked on a public consultation. They want to know what you think their priorities ought to be over the coming years, and we're going to talk to Kirsty Machin, their president. Kirsty has previously worked as a journalist, editor and policy researcher in the HIV AIDS sector. But the principal thing that makes her, I think, well, unique to VAC is that it's the first time they've had a woman at the helm. So how's that coming after all those men, Kirsty?
Well, I should say, first of all, that it feels most auspicious to be here on your 10th anniversary programme, so I'm pleased, even though it was somewhat of a surprise to me. In terms of being the first woman to be at the helm of the VAC, in a peculiar way, I've never really thought about it in those terms. It possibly was more exciting to people in Victoria and to the VAC members than me, in a way, because I've been involved in the HIV sector for quite a long time, working with NAPWHA and other organisations and in paid and other capacities. So to me, it just felt like an interesting opportunity to be able to sort of make a contribution in Victoria, being from Sydney, and I had moved to Victoria a few years ago. So I still see the issues around the VAC sort of at the moment as being centrally concerned with HIV, and so that's the expertise that I sort of bring to it.
But there's been a lot of change at the VAC in recent times. I mean, you know, Mike Kennedy left. You had a very rapid turnover. Your predecessor didn't stay in post for all that long, did he, Michael?
No, he actually was to go overseas, yeah.
He went off overseas as Mike Kennedy moved on after many, many years in post. So there's been this kind of renewal happening at the VAC, fresh set of eyes, fresh sort of look at things. Is that why you're starting on this consultation?
No. Well, we're starting on the consultation because there was a previously existing strategic plan that ran through until sort of through to 2011. And I think it is always a good practice and opportunity for organisations to look at what they're doing and sort of take stock of things and ask some sort of pertinent questions about their purpose, their intentions, the services that they provide, the communities that they provide those services to, especially for an organisation like VAC. So in a way, the timing is very nice because we have a reasonably new executive director in the form of Matt Dixon, and he's been there coming up to a year. And we've had a couple of new additions to our board as well as me. So the organisation feels quite energetic, it feels quite enthusiastic. And of course, there are some people who will be involved in this strategic planning process, like our Vice President, David Menager, who will be familiar to many people in the community and to this station.
And to this program.
And, you know, brings a great sort of deal of depth of history to that as well. So it's not like we're all sort of, you know, newbies.
No, but you have got a lot of new eyes in there. Now, also joining me in the studio after quite a long break, actually, welcoming back Rob Mitchell.
Good evening, Doug. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well, thanks. How are you doing?
You don't look older in 10 years. You haven't aged at all.
You weren't here in the beginning. What do you think of this?
Well, I think it's good. I'm interested to hear Kirsty's thoughts on. It seems to me that one of the great strengths of the VAC is that they've always. I guess there's been, you know, it's obviously been some issues on the run through, but they've seemed to me to have always tried to keep the volunteer base at the forefront of things. And I know, you know, particularly in the sort of the late 80s, you know, it was extraordinarily difficult to get any sort of sense of optimism going when it, you know, when there was just despair everywhere. So I guess the question I'd ask is, I mean, is that something that, you know, you're going to keep focusing on obviously the volunteer base to make sure that is continually renewed and kept energised, because that cannot be an easy process.
Look, it's true that the VAC, is fundamentally about its volunteer base, and it's a volunteer board as well. So, as well as keeping those people who contribute to services as volunteers and volunteer for the organisation in a range of ways around World AIDS Day and all sorts of events, it's important that we sort of focus as well on having people who are sort of willing to and able to contribute to sort of being on the VAC board. The volunteers are actually. It's going to be a significant, group within our consultation about the forthcoming strategic plan, and there, as well as all people who are on the volunteer database being asked to sort of contribute and sort of share their thoughts about where the organisation might go and what they think about the pertinence, the relevance and the way that the current services and advocacy and other activities are structured. We'll be looking to get their input in other ways, including at a community meeting, which I'll come to shortly.
Yep. There's been some criticism in past years that compared to, say, ACON up in New South Wales, the VAC has been a bit behind the eight ball with its campaigning, has been a bit quiet, comparatively speaking, perhaps took its eye off the ball for a little while back there. You do seem to have been getting your mojo back, I must say, over the last year or two. But there did seem to be a period where things went a bit fallow for a while. So energising the organisation must be, you know, a huge part of what you're doing. Do you see yourself, in fact, energising the organisation by broadening your remit in a way to similar to what ACON has done up in Sydney?
Look, this is an interesting question, and what I do want to say is that I, for one, in my capacity as president, and I think the rest of the board shares this view, goes into this with quite an open mind. There are other ways of kind of looking at how you provide services and what you might do, mm-hmm. and the communities you might provide them for, without necessarily sort of leaping into a really kind of drastic sort of change kind of first up. So what I do want to say is that it's probably is not the case that what the VAC is aiming to do is overnight become, a great or the only sort of provider of sort of services, advocacy and other things for lesbians, gays, bisexuals and transgender people in Victoria.
Yeah, but you could, for example, broaden your remit to be like the LGBTI health body. covering all health issues for LGBTI in Victoria, not just AIDS?
Look, there are reasons for thinking that that there are things that the Victorian AIDS Council could do that are outside of just the sort of HIV focus. And our previous strategic plan has focused still largely on HIV and STIs. There are, in fact, organisations in Victoria that are providing certain kinds of activities, advocacy and other services, or not direct services, but other intellectual capacity, if you like, for lesbians and gay men in health, and including Gay and Lesbian Health Victoria. And they're going to be an interesting partner in what, you know, how we progress things following on from this strategic plan. It would seem to me that the ideal thing to do is to look at the services that we provide now and then say, well, what can we logically build on, given VAC's expertise in things like health promotion, to provide those to other communities?
Okay. We're going to have to leave it there, but before we say goodbye, tell us about these consultation forums.
Okay. So
briefly.
Monday the 7th of May at 6:30pm is actually one for all members and volunteers. We'll be invited to that. That's at the State Library. And the other one, which is open to anyone from the community who wants to contribute or is interested, is also at the State Library on the Thursday the 10th of May. Information is on the VAC website.
I was going to say, they'll all be on the VAC website.
They will indeed.
Everybody knows where that is. Kirsty Machen, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks very much, Doug.
Up next, major changes afoot for healthcare, and for the first time, the special needs of LGBTI seniors will be recognised and catered for. Federal Minister for Ageing Mark Butler joins us along with Corey Earlham from the LGBTI Health Alliance.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report. News and current affairs for the Rainbow community.
The government recently ran an extended consultation process looking at aged care. And as part of that process, the Minister for Ageing, among other things, Mark Butler MP, attended a number of forums around the country where he heard direct from LGBTI seniors about the special problems faced by the elders of our community. Corey Earlham from the LGBTI Health Alliance and the Minister join me now. And I have to say, Minister, the community seems to think you responded quite magnificently to those consultations.
Oh, that's very kind. I got a lot out of the consultations. I mean, there are a wonderful number of groups and experts who are willing to fly to Canberra and tell me their views on what we should do to make aged care services better in this country. But there's no substitute for getting out into the community in the big capital cities and regional areas and hearing from people themselves about their experiences and their expectations.
Can you just take us through exactly what is there for the GLBTI community in these proposals?
Well, firstly, I think the GLBTI community will get a range of things from these proposals that will be shared equally and enjoyed equally across the community. I mean, the primary focus of this package is to support people to be able to stay living in their own home as long as they possibly can. That was the overwhelming message that I got from older Australians travelling around the country. Instead, what we have now is a system largely built around nursing homes, a system built in the 1980s, very much around the idea that, well, you're largely on your own until such time as you really need some residential care and you need to go into a nursing home. Our support for people in their own home is patchy. There's clearly unmet demand and we want to fill those gaps. But the package also recognises that older Australians are a diverse lot with diverse needs, and the system hasn't been good in the past at recognising and catering for that diversity. There is cultural diversity, there is gender and sexual diversity, there are people who live in very remote parts of the country that aren't sharing the quality of aged care services that people in central parts of capital cities do. So a focus on diversity and trying to make the system more flexible and more sensitive to diverse needs is quite central to our reforms as well.
Well, one of the big things is that you're planning on recognising GLBTI people as a special needs group. What is a special needs group?
Well, look, this was something we had a wonderful round table that was held in ACON's headquarters in Sydney, and the LGBTI Health Alliance helped convene that with a range of experts and other groups in this area. And we had a good discussion, Corey will remember as well, about this special needs provision, because, you know, it's not the most wonderfully descriptive title, but what it essentially does is to recognise that there are cohorts in the community among older Australians who do have needs that differ from the average.
So you might be talking about people who are from a different cultural background.
Yeah. So at the moment it's cultural and linguistically diverse people, people of an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander background. A few years ago we introduced a new category, people who are homeless or at risk of homelessness who require aged care services. That came out of the homelessness white paper. So it's quite a diverse category, I guess. Yeah. But it recognises that not every older person has the same needs.
It helps you target.
That's right.
You know, making sure the money's best spent, I suppose.
That's right. What it means when the rubber hits the road is that we're able to target the allocation of licences or packages, which we've done in the last couple of ACARs anyway, the aged care approval rounds anyway, to allow organisations that are going to cater particularly, for example, for GLBTI elders when putting together an aged care facility or more usually a set of home care packages.
Yeah. Well, speaking as someone who's sort of heading into seniordom myself at the moment, having turned 60 last year, this is obviously of great interest to me. I have no particular interest in going into a home unless I absolutely have to. But there are people of my age and older who are not keen on being identified as GLBTI, and yet they still have these special needs. How are you going to cope with that particular problem?
Well, I think we need to be sensitive to it. There will be among the older GLBTI community, as there are among the younger GLBTI community, a variety of views about the degree to which they want to identify. And we also recognise that among the current group of elders in the GLBTI community, I mean, their history is one not only of ongoing stigma in the community, but one of growing up in an era of criminal sanction around their sexuality. So I know from talking to a number of them that there are views about health professionals and institutions that are often pretty negative. So we want a system that allows those people who feel cautious about identifying their sexuality to be able to use the system easily and comfortably, but also those who do want to identify their sexuality and have those needs catered for to be able to do that as well. And I'm not sure that the aged care system has been particularly good up until now at catering for sexual diversity.
Well, I'm not sure the aged care system has been very good at catering for anybody's sexuality up to now, because there's a perception in the community that older people don't have sex. I remember when we put my mother into care and she struck up a relationship with a male resident as well. They rang me up and said, what should we do about it? And I said, well, I think she's old enough to decide for herself about that. So there is this kind of patronising attitude that's been there in the past. If there's going to be more sensitivity around that, that can only be a good thing. We talked about getting recognition as a special needs group. I understand there's like more than one way that can be done. You could either amend the Aged Care Act or you could do it by a special ministerial instruction. Which way are you favouring to do that?
Well, our inclination at the moment is to amend the Aged Care Act. We'll be making a range of amendments to the Aged Care Act anyway, so we can put it into that package. And that's what we did in the past. That's what we did, for example, when the Homelessness White Paper identified people who are at risk of homelessness as being a special need, obviously very different needs, but nonetheless identifiable needs within the aged care system. So that's our intention at the moment. But obviously there are a range of other things beyond that sort of legislative change that we're keen to work on now and into the future.
Corey.
So Minister, just to get technical, we're talking about Section 11.3, updating the Aged Care Act, as opposed to updating the aged care principles by ministerial decree.
That's my advice at the moment, but look, I don't stand on technicalities like this. If there are different ways to skin a cat and get things moving along more quickly, I'm open to that.
But yeah,
what I do want is for the system to recognise that different cohorts in the community have different needs.
Yeah, the problem with that one is, of course, that if it's only done by ministerial instruction rather than amending the Act, it's easier for an incoming government that's not as sympathetic as this one to reverse the changes that you've made.
Yeah, well, the intention we've announced so far is to amend the Act.
Good.
And we appreciate and value the need to do this quicker than perhaps can be done with legislative timetable in the current Parliament. So we look forward to working along that process with you.
It's obviously not going to be easy with the changing anything in the current parliament, especially with things being as up in the air at the moment as they are. But
although, Doug, I would
best
like
of luck
to
with it.
I would like to think that we'll see bipartisan or tripartisan support for this issue.
Well, fingers crossed on that one.
I think it was in your show a little while ago that Tony Abbott supported the need of LGBTI ageing as an issue and seemed to be open to that issue, and hopefully he'll come back and confirm for you that this will happen and that there will be bipartisan support.
Well, I can but ask him and remind him what he said last time. I'll just refer him to the transcript that's still on Andrew Bolt's website. we've talked about the special needs thing. Can you just run through some of the other things that are in this package? I see we've got $2.5 million, for example, for aged care training.
So what Tanya Plibersek actually, when she was Minister for Human Services, funded ACON to conduct a pilot project, to deliver what they described as sensitivity training to aged care staff, so that aged care staff would be able to accommodate the particular needs of GLBTI elders. That was evaluated at the end of the pilot. It evaluated very positively, and a recommendation was made through the evaluation that we roll that project out across the country. So we have funded that in the reform package. There are also a range of other things that were raised in the roundtables, or the forums that are conducted around the country, and particularly the roundtable that was conducted at ACON in Sydney. For example, the operations of the discrimination laws, or particularly the exemptions under the discrimination laws, was raised both in relation to the employment of staff in aged care settings, but also the delivery of effectively publicly funded aged care services. And as your listeners probably know, Nicola Roxon is at the sort of final stages of the review of our discrimination legislation, with draft legislation being expected over the course of the next several months for further public consultation. So that's another important opportunity, I think, to talk about aged care and its ability to accommodate, be sensitive to the needs of GLBTI elders.
Corey.
And Minister, I think one of the other beneficial things that came out was not only was there $2.5 million for training, but there was inclusion now of LGBT in the broader diversity fund of 24.2. And something that we've been only just starting to talk about in the community, recognition that there's a need to do the community visitor scheme for LGBTI people, whether that be through diverse ways such as telephone support, or whether that be through rocking up to somebody's home, where we see a lot of older people who identify or perhaps don't identify as LGBTI not necessarily having the usual support structures around them. So that's a fantastic initiative that I saw included in there, and thank you for that.
Yeah, that's right, and thank you, Corey. But there is a broad fund available for diversity projects, which will be open to culturally and linguistically diverse organisations who want to run services, and GLBTI organisations as well. And we're in the final throes of deciding upon our sort of triennial grants process, which will be announced very, very soon. And I was very pleased that there was an extraordinarily diverse range of projects for GLBTI elders proposed for that, from regional Australia, in Alzheimer's settings, a range of other general settings as well. Mm-hmm. So there really is a lot of activity in this space. After there not being much activity above the radar for many, many years, there's a lot of activity in this space, and I think lots of reason to be hopeful about the future.
Well, we'll come back to this in just a moment. This is Doug Pollard speaking with the Minister for Mental Health and Ageing, Mark Butler, and Corey Earlham of the LGBTI Health Alliance.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report. News and current affairs for the Rainbow community.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you. I'm discussing the changes to aged care with Mark Butler, MP, the Minister for Ageing, and Corey Earlham from the LGBTI Health Alliance. Now, in the run-up to this program, I had a number of emails from listeners. I have to say, all of them complimentary. You'll be happy to know, Minister. Joe Harrison said, I would like to thank the Minister profusely for what you've done so far. And Gina Wilson from the Organisation of Intersex International says, can you ask Mr. Butler if he knows this is the first and only intersex inclusive aged care policy in the world, and can you give him a big hug from me if he'll let you?
Well, maybe after we've got this massive table in between us, Doug, but I didn't know that, and that's a wonderful thing to hear. But look, I've only been involved in talking about these areas of policy since I was a minister. I know a lot of people have been working in this area for many, many years. Jo Harrison is from my part of the world in Port Adelaide Semaphore, and I know she, among others, have been battering away at this stuff for a lot of years, and people should be very proud, I guess, of the profile that these issues now have.
And we didn't even have to stake out that wonderful veranda in your office in Semaphore that I saw when I was there last time.
It's a very lovely part of the world, Corey.
Yes, I think Jo does deserve a big shout out. She has worked very, very hard on this for a very long time.
She has, but Minister, I'm also interested, just out of curiosity, we know people like Jo and others mobilise large number of LGBTI elders, many who were very concerned about identifying themselves, but they did it. What kind of impact does that make as a minister to have these people who are affected rocking up to every session that you've got? Does it matter?
Well, it had a very big impact on me. Firstly, because when people have the courage to come along and stand up and talk about the personal impact that a system has on them, you feel much more obligation, I guess, to listen and take those things seriously. Mm. I learned a lot through it. I genuinely did. But I saw some extraordinarily brave examples of people standing up in their community for the first time, often in front of 200 or 300 people for the first time, and saying, I am a gay man, and I've lived in this community for 40 or 50 years, or I'm a gay woman, I've lived in this community for a long time, I have these particular needs, and I'm sick of the system not recognising them properly. So it was a very powerful series of conversations I had, and I think the people who came to them, they were in capital cities and they were in regional areas, had a profound impact on where the policy ended up.
Well, that's good. And I hope you're going to go on listening to older people as well, because one of the questions that came into me was, will the minister support initiatives that help to put older GLBTI people in the driver's seat as the reforms roll out, as the people did when they were speaking up on their own behalf at the conversations across Australia? And will he support initiatives that focus on GLBTI people as educators and experts themselves, rather than, as the writer put it, leaving it to a bunch of 30-year-olds who don't know anything about it?
Well, I think that's a really important point. I mean, Corey and I have talked about this a couple of times since the announcement on Friday, that one of the things that was raised in the Productivity Commission report and at our consultation was the question of whether there needs to be a broad GLBTI ageing strategy. And I indicated I was very favourably inclined towards that, but frankly, I don't think there's really been the opportunity to pull that together between those consultations and the announcement. But this is not the last word. I'm meeting with the GLBTI Health Alliance in the next couple of weeks, and I think there is the opportunity to start building on the foundational work we announced on Friday and start to use your listeners' language, put GLBTI elders more in the driver's seat.
And what about the Health Alliance? Are you going to start recruiting an older cohort of people to help you for your side of this?
Well, whilst there's been a lot of money announced, there's been no money announced for the Health Alliance, so the recruitment process would need to be evaluated when we know what we can recruit for and what we've been funded for. But that's obviously not my role, and something you can talk to Warren about next time he's on the show. Minister, thanks for talking about the strategy, because I think it's going to be really crucial now that we've got this special needs group. And for people who don't know, one of the things that this means is that when any aged care organisation applies for funding, they'll need to talk about what are they doing for broadly the special needs groups, now that includes LGBTI. And so that's going to have a profound impact when you potentially run the risk of people trying to do the right thing and then forcing older people to come out. So we need to be able to be ready to help them understand, with organisations like the Age Community Services Australia and the new other national peak body, how can they go about sensitively reporting on that information they need to, without breaking the privacy needs of the individual client involved. So this strategy, I think, or action plan, or whatever it ends up being, is going to be really crucial to be able to identify all those things that need to be done to tie up all these loose ends. The new gay gateway one-stop shop needs to have something that LGBTI seniors can access.
Can I stop you there? Yeah, what's the gateway?
So the gateway minister can probably talk about it more, but it is the new phone number, website, one-stop shop that people will be able to go to access aged care. Because one of the hardest things, you know, having taken my grandfather through the aged care system myself, is trying to find out where to go.
Yes, indeed.
In my forums, I heard stories where people would tell me that they'd worked in aged care for 20 or 25 years. They thought they knew it back to front, but when, as Corey said, they had to find a member of their own family a place, they couldn't get the information they needed to make the best possible choice.
I can say that too.
The centrepiece of the gateway is going to be a My Aged Care website, which you might have heard in education contexts and such like, and a person will be able to search in their own region. All of the providers find everything out about them there. Their services, their amenities, their fees, their complaints history, a rating system, which we're in the process of building. And I'd imagine that in time we'll talk about their capacity to advertise as GLBTI friendly or a range of other things like that. Now, whether that's the way we want to go or not, but I mean,
I'd like to think it's not in a time. I'd like to think that we're only a year away from this being up and running, and sticking July a flag in with small opt-in options could happen soon.
That's right. I mean, I think the special needs amendment to the Act will make significant change. It's not just about the training that we've decided to fund last Friday for existing staff, but all new aged care staff are trained in special needs categories. And so now, from the time we're able to amend the legislation, all new staff trained in aged care will be trained in GLBTI elder issues as well.
Now, there's been some attempts in the past to create GLBTI specific aged care facilities, moving away from the home care side of things. There have been attempts in the past to create LGBTI specific aged care facilities. Given these changes, would the government support the building of those sort of specific facilities under, say, the Special Needs Building Fund?
Well, what we've done is we've consolidated a couple of different capital grants funds. The Commonwealth essentially expects that providers are able to build their own facilities, and they will be community groups in some cases. For example, some of the early waves of migration after the war found money, built themselves facilities, and then were able to access Commonwealth funding for the recurrent side. But we know that in some parts of the country, it's hard to find the money to build, and so we do have capital grants that run every year. We've consolidated those. They're largely targeted at rural and regional areas where you just can't find the money to make these buildings. But there is some residual capacity there for us to identify other priorities. I haven't given that much thought yet, but by and large, it's important to say that the general proposition, the starting proposition, is that organisations build their own facilities and then access Commonwealth fund on a recurrent basis.
You know, when I speak to private providers about this, one of the biggest challenges in creating a standalone facility is we don't know where older people live that identify as LGBTI.
Indeed.
But we do know that people don't really want to move that far away from their geographical location when they move into a facility. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a confidence level, or they don't have a confidence level, about how many people there'll be to continually fill the spots as they become vacant.
Indeed.
So maybe one of the better options will be looking at things like an LGBTI wing or an LGBTI friendly wing that isn't exclusive. But then we're going to have the same old discussion we've been having since the 70s. Do the women want to be with the men?
Yes, it can get a bit much at times. I mean, that's one reason why I think it's so much more important that ordinary aged care providers become sensitive to and trained in dealing with GLBTI people. One final point I want to bring up is the question of pay for aged care workers, because I think this is going to need money to make it work. I remember when my mother was having home care. This is in the UK, but it's the same problem there as it is here. One of the problems she had, particularly as she was developing dementia, was that she did not have the same carers all the time. There was a terrific turnover of carers, which actually made her worse and increased her confusion, because she never got used to dealing with the same set of people. And one of the main reasons for that is that it is such a low-paid job. How are we going to cope with that issue?
Well, you're right, it is a notoriously underpaid job. If you're a nurse, registered or enrolled nurse, you're probably earning on average across the country $175 a week less than your colleagues in the public hospital system. If you're a carer, which is the bulk of the workforce in aged care, your rate might be as low as $18.06 per hour. I meet people who've worked in the sector for 20 years, got a Certificate 3, then got their Certificate 4, have first aid qualifications, and are still earning significantly less than their children, maybe even grandchildren, are earning in retail and hospitality. The biggest component of the $3.7 billion in initiatives announced last Friday was for workforce to start to lift the wages in this area, because if we don't, we're not going to be able to have enough people to deliver the aged care services we need. We've got 300,000 staff in the sector today. We're going to need almost a million over the coming decades. And if we don't lift wages and make this a more sustainable occupation for people, reflecting the importance of the work they do, we're going to be in very big strife here.
Yep. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up there. Corey, you just want a final word before we go?
Look, I just wanted to say publicly, Minister, thank you. You have been one of the few ministers I've dealt with who have been completely across the detail, probably partly due to all the conversations that you've had around the country of what this means to LGBTI people. You've exceeded our expectations in being supportive and looking at these issues, and we look forward to working with you again in this or any other portfolio that you have.
Thank you very much. I'm good to be with you.
And I'd like to say a big thank you, yes, on behalf of the whole community, and thank you for joining us today. And as I said before, speaking as an LGBTI senior myself, looking forward to working with you on this in the future, and also with you, Corey.
Dougie still looks so young.
It's the Clairol. Up next, we're going to cross live to Perth to speak with the Equal Love Rally over there that are gathering outside the Margaret Court Victory Life Church this evening.
You're listening to The Rainbow Report. News and current affairs for the Rainbow community.
Well, later this evening, fairly soon actually, there's going to be a rally to preserve marriage at the Victory Life Church in Perth. That's the one-woman church invented by Margaret Court, where she is the pastor. And there'll be some other speakers as well. There's a rabbi turning up, Bill Muhlenberg's turning up. They're going to have a collection to defray costs, and then there's going to be tea and coffee afterwards. Whether they're going to get their tea and coffee in peace and quiet depends on my next guest, because the Equal Love in Perth have organised a counter demo, and Leo Bronstein joins us on the line now. Hello, Leo.
Hello.
Got a few people out there, have you, Leo?
Yes, we do. We've got just about 100 people waiting at Glendalough Station right now.
And how far is that from the church?
It's about 5 minutes walk.
So about 100 people. And you got any of the very colourful Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence with you?
They haven't showed up yet, but I'm sure they will. They're a regular feature at our rallies.
Well, I would think it would be particularly appropriate today. What made you decide to hold this rally?
Well, I think that when people like Margaret Court actually come out and try to spew their homophobic hatred to the public, I think it's the duty of same-sex marriage and equal marriage activists to come out and oppose them. Because, well, actually, if we can, if we can actually intimate, force them to stop, can actually force them to, acknowledge that they are a minority in society, then I think that's just another step towards greater acceptance of LGBTI people in society.
Well, yes, you could well be right there.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm sure you are. I mean, we've had a lot of these rallies, of course. The one thing I like about having the sisters at these rallies is that they bring a sense of humour to these things, because I think it's important not to be, constantly angry about this sort of thing, but to have some fun with it. Are you planning to have fun tonight?
Oh, we're planning to have fun. We've got plenty of placards covered in puns. They're absolutely atrocious and wonderful.
Can you give us a couple of examples?
The ball's in your court, Margaret, for example, with a big rainbow tennis ball.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I absolutely adore that one.
That's a good one, yes. Any others?
That's actually one of the only ones that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm off in a quiet spot, sorry.
Yeah, you got away from the crowd.
Yes, it's a bit loud.
So when you actually get outside the doors there, you're going to be chanting and making a bit of noise. But do you think they're going to notice you?
Oh, we're going to make them notice us. It's going to be a very vibrant rally, I think. These ones usually are.
Because they've kept their little rally very quiet, haven't they? I mean, yes. There was no publicity about this at all, really, was there? Except on a few Christian websites.
Yes, and a secret leaflet that they've been distributing amongst known hardcore right-wingers. So, really, I think it just shows that they're on the back foot in society. They know that they're isolated. They know that actually most people support same-sex marriage, right? Why would they try and come out and publicly expose themselves to criticism? I think it's a stroke of luck that we've managed to get this and that we can actually go down there and show them that they are isolated.
Thank goodness for Facebook. Rob Mitchell, you wanted to come in here.
Look, I think you're absolutely right. I think they do know that they're on the back foot. And I just wonder, do you think that's partially the response because of the response that Margaret Court got in Melbourne? I mean, she certainly had a very torrid run in the papers, even in the the tabloids here, it was clear that, very clear that public opinion was running against them. Do you think that's had an impact on them?
Yes, I think it has. I think these sorts of rallies, and the other example that I can think of is the demonstration they had in Brisbane recently, almost 500 people to come out and oppose the hate truck that was going around Queensland. And I think it's these sorts of demos that actually, aside from the major demos as well, that have put the issue back on into the mainstream of Australian society, have actually managed to push public opinion to a vast majority of people supporting same-sex marriage that has actually put them on the back foot and put them into retreat.
Yeah, because, I mean, something very extraordinary happened with the House inquiry into same-sex marriage. Come the Thursday, it was running at about 58% people putting submissions into the House inquiry in favour. By the time it closed 24 hours later, that was up to 64%. In 24 hours, something like 44,000 people put in submissions. Now, where on earth did they all come from?
I think it just shows that actually people are keeping on to this issue now. It's become such a mainstream issue and people are angry about it and people are actually willing to come out and actually willing to do something to demonstrate their support, that I think it's totally unsurprising that you've got the vast majority of submissions, even to a parliamentary inquiry that I think was naturally only going to be really sampling a minority of people who were following it, ends up being hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands, I should say, that come out and do show their support. I think it's totally unsurprising.
When's your next main Equal Love rally over there?
In May 12th. It's going to be at 1 p.m. at Stirling Gardens, and we're going to hold the big rally to kind of make sure that the Labor Party has assumed the conscience vote as its platform, and now we want to make damn sure that they actually do vote to support equal marriage rights. And I think this is the only way that we can do that.
Yeah, well, of course, that's the nationwide day of action, isn't it? And we've got a rally here in Melbourne as well at the State Library at about 1 o'clock, also on Saturday, May the 12th. So it remains to be seen how many we'll get out for them. Have numbers been rising or falling at these rallies in Perth? Because they're pretty regular things, aren't they?
Numbers have been rising over the years. The largest one that we've had was just before the August federal election in 2010, which was almost 1,000 people, which is really huge for Perth. And I think it just shows that, again, equal marriage is a issue that most people support in Australian society, and they're willing to come out in public and show that support.
Well, they certainly are. Leo, thank you very much for joining us this evening. Have a good time. Enjoy.
Oh, I will.
And, hug a sister for me if they do turn up.
Of course. And I'll be sure to pass it on.
All right. That was Leo Bronstein there from Equal Love. He's one of the organisers of the rally that's going on right now over in Perth. And if you're listening in Perth, where's my little details? Yes, the counter-demonstration there is at Glendalough train station. And then they're going to march around the corner to the Victory Life Church on the corner of Frobisher Street and Neal Street, just in time for the kickoff of the main event, which will be what does it say here? 6:30 p.m. for a 7 p.m. start. That's Perth time, of course.
It's interesting they didn't promulgate the church-based event more widely.
No, it took me quite some time to find out about it. I discovered it quite by accident. I was going through, as I do, trawling through some other Christian websites to see, what the trolls are talking about this week, because some of them are pretty vile, I have to say. And there was just an offhand remark that there was going to be an event with Bill Muhlenberg, Rabbi Coleman, and Margaret Court coming up today, but it didn't say where it was, it didn't say when. when it was or anything else. But when I did a bit of Googling around, I then found out from another church website, a Subiaco church, in fact, had the full details, which I then put on Facebook.
Because it just indicates to me that if they're not promoting it in the broader community, it does indicate to me that with the people that are turning up, they're basically preaching, you know,
to the converted. Yes,
and so that indicates to me that they are on the back foot, which is a good thing.
Which is a good thing. Now, we've had a few messages in while we've been doing our various interviews. As I pointed out earlier on, we recorded the interview with Minister Butler earlier. One comment here: despite that controversial opinion piece in the Australian by Tim Wilson today, I don't know if you saw that one, where he said basically old codgers like me should pay for our own care and not expect people of his generation to do so, that angered many elderly people. The real question to be asked is, why shouldn't children be able to contribute to the cost of their parents' care? Migrant communities have cared very well for their elderly parents. This is Joe Hockey's point, I think, talking about Asian values the other day. And it's been done quite well within their own home. A mix of public and private initiative is best in this instance.
Remind me how old Tim is.
Well,
number one, and number two.
Well, I don't think he's hit 40 yet.
Number two,
by quite a long way.
What if you're not in a position either financially or you just don't have the family around to look after you?
And forgetting the point, of course, that we have, our generation have already paid in enormous amounts in order to be looked after when we're older, and to say that we shouldn't get something back for it, I think is mean, to say the least. Now, a couple of congratulatory emails here, which I might as well read out because I feel like having a big head when I go home tonight. Congratulations, Doug, on 10 years. Keep up the great work. Oh, let Kirsty of Vic AIDS know that we love the guy in his undies posters that encourages people to get regular sexual health checks. It's fantastic to see them on tram and train stations. Well done. That message is from Peter and Wayne. And our old friend South Yarra says, happy birthday to the John Fain of gay media, a breath of fresh air to many in the community and those in the wider public. Hugs and thanks for the gift of your wonderful wisdom and your gorgeous show. Very nice. Thank you, South Yarra. Wonderful wisdom. It's better than being called a Melbourne institution, which I was the other week. I got home and my partner said, you mean a mental institution?
Now, what do you think of the VAC's consultation?
It will be interesting to see what comes out of that, because as I sort of hinted, a lot of people have not been very happy with the VAC in recent years.
Well, you know, their fortunes have waxed and waned over the years. I'm interested in how they tackle or how they treat the dissenters. Because do you remember when we had John Searle, who, when he was in here a few months ago, the then president of the JCCV, the Jewish Council, and they were running a consultation about, you know, GLBDI
and nobody came.
Exactly. Because and we made the point, I think the very relevant point, that the people, you know, wouldn't complain to the organisation directly that they were unhappy with. Mm. So I just wonder how they're going to handle that.
Well, we shall see. Anyway, that is more or less it for this week. And I want to thank you all for listening, and thanks to all my guests, Corey Earlham, Kirsty Machen, Mark Butler, the Minister for Mental Health, Ageing, and Leo Bronstein over there in Perth, and of course to Keza for the production. Rob, thank you also for coming back into the studio again after quite a long gap.
Pleasure to be back.
Hope we're going to see a bit more of you in the future.
I'm sure you will.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.